Ready to start our session. I'm not really talking to you, I'm talking to the person who's recording. That is the cue for them to start. My name is Tyrone Burkett. I am a Presbyterian pastor. It's good to be in the company of so many Lutherans. I spent some time, in fact, 9 winters in St. Paul, where there are a lot of Lutherans, and attended United Theological Seminary there, and took several classes at Luther Northwestern. And sometimes it's just as well to be out of your own community and to be in another community. So it's good to be here. This is our first time. My wife, John Irma, is here with me. Our first time, our first experience with Holden. And it's been a very enjoyable experience. We will leave on Saturday, and that would have been 2 weeks for us. And it's been fun. This session is concerned with maintaining a journal. And we're going to talk about that today. And our next couple of sessions, if you're interested, we'll talk about it. And we'll give an overview today and get into some specifics. And you never have enough time. You never finish. So all you can do is start and hopefully find somewhere some of the things that we cover. I was trying to figure out what scriptural lesson I like to start with, and I think I'll go back and do what I did yesterday, because every time I read it, I get more meaning from it. So we're going to read a little bit from Psalms 139. Let us hear the word of God. Lord, you have examined me and you know me. You know everything I do. From far away, you understand all my thoughts. You see me, whether I am working or resting. You know all my actions. Even before I speak, you already know what I will say. You are all around me on every side. You protect me with your power. Examine me, O God, and know my mind. Test me and discover my thoughts. Find out if there is any evil in me and guide me in the everlasting way. I'm glad somebody recorded that. I think it's absolutely wonderful that several thousand years later that this recording is shared with so many thousands and even millions of people, and that we can gain so many wonderful spiritual insights from somebody who bothered to write it down. This is a journal. Did you know that? This book here, that's what it really is. Before there was a journal, we had what we call oral tradition. And we passed it down from generation to generation, orally. Maybe that's not all bad. It helps us to maintain a memory, at least. But it's somewhat a comfort to know that we're staying somewhat closer to the original text when we write it down. And so we have read from the journal, as I would call it. And somebody out, once they have bedded down the sheep for the day and all the clutter and all the busyness of their life, and just wrote or said verbally this affirmation about their experience with God. And at some point it was recorded, and we have it today. We're not going to use any flip charts, or audiovisual aids. And hopefully we'll make this clear enough that you don't even have to take notes unless you just want to. Because whenever we record or write down on some tree or some forest must give up their life for us. And that's why I think the oral tradition has been of significance, but we want to save as much as we can of the forest and rely on our memory. And so we have, we're going to use a metaphor that I call the J-car. And if you can remember the J-car, I think you'll remember what we're going to talk about today. The J is for the journal. And the C is for various forms or dimensions of the J-car. C is for confessions. That's a particular thing that we record in our journal. The A, affirmations. We just finished reading that affirmation from Psalms 139. And the R is for recreation. And you take that all together and you have the J-car. And so that's what we're going to talk about. So if you can remember the J-car, you can remember what we're talking about. So picture a vehicle. And as we travel, we always travel with others, don't we? We start off with a family of origin, and at some point we get out, or others will get out, and then others will join us in our J-car, and we have our own families, and then we come to a place like Holden, and others join us in our J-car. When we journey always with others. It's wonderful that we don't have to do this alone. And I found it very valuable to keep a record of the journey, because as we journey, we have to acquire information. We get information from family, from the world we live in, from all of God's creation. And the last time I did this, I read the parable of the sower, where seeds were scattered all over God's creation, and some fell on the good ground, some on the bad ground. You know the story. But I think the point is that all God's creation is saturated with wonderful words of God. And from every point, every dimension, there's something for us to listen to and to gain information from as we make our journey. My wife and I went up to our journey up to Heart Lake, and as we made our journey up there together, we saw others along the way, and one of the things you learn very quickly that you want to pick up information about the trail. And that's what we're talking about, really. I mean, as we move along in life, we want to pick up information. And we pick up information from a variety of ways. We pick up information, obviously, through our minds. We know a lot about the mind, how we gather information through the libraries. And essentially, that's one of the shortcuts of trying to understand your own journey by that's the purpose of education, to make a record of findings. And it helps us in our individual journey when we can take a shortcut by going to the library, by reading other experiences and gather data that's been collected by others, so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time, you know. And so as we move along in life, we're interested in gathering information through our mind. But we also have the senses, and we gather information through the senses, don't we? Mm-hmm. And sight. Just think about all the information you gather in terms of your journey in life through your sight. Just enormous amount of information. that we very often take for granted. This theme for this conference year or season is listening to the sacred, and that's another sense, isn't it? You're hearing, just think for a moment about all the information that you gather from the hearing. When we came up here on the bus about a week and a half ago now, as I said, this is my first time up here, a little boy on the bus said, "This smells like Holden." Well, I didn't know what that meant, but I understand what it means now. But think about all the information that you can gather through just smell, through taste, through touching. And we are information gatherers. We are the type of beings, we want information, we want to have meaning, so that it will assist us as we journey in our J-car. The last session I will talk about, and I didn't do it last week, and I haven't done this before, I think because it's a more sensitive area. But there are, in addition to the senses, there is the extra sensory sort of things, or through dreams and other ESP type experiences, which I believe most of us have, but we're very private about. And if we're private about information that we have, then we can't share that information with others, which will be instructive for their travel. And I have discovered that the more that we share information, it sort of reinforces it for ourselves in addition to our sharing it with other people, if you're following what I'm saying. So the last session we'll talk about ESP, dreams, hallucinations, other forms of our acquiring information. We in the West are preoccupied with gathering information through the mind, but if we just limit ourselves just to that, we're going to be very limited. And so we want to be cognizant of the other areas in which we receive information. Now, one of the questions I get asked over and over again, what are the rules for maintaining a journal? How do you do it? How often? How should you write? The thing that I say, there is really basically one rule, that's to write. It's your journal. Don't be concerned whether it makes sense. A lot of times when you journal stuff, it doesn't make sense at all at the time. Don't try to make sense of it. Just write it down. You don't have to worry about grammar. I mean, your English teacher will not, grade you on this. I promise you. You don't have to worry about spelling. It's for you. As long as you understand it, you understand the spelling, the grammar, the whatever, that's all that it requires. There are books which will suggest different ways to do it, but the basic rule is to write. And that is a real discipline because there's a temptation not to do that. And your journey in life is a very special one. And all God's creation is trying to give you information to help you in your journey in life. And so it's important to record as best you can and as faithfully as you can that wonderful information which God is trying to reveal to you because you're going to need it at some point in time, or others may need it. Let me tell the stories which we will be referring to at some points. It was a family going on a trip, and the father had a notation sign on the glove box in case of emergency, call my brother. And there was an accident, and unfortunately, all the occupants were killed. And the sheriff came on the scene and noticed a note, called the brother and said, "I'm sorry, we have bad news. All the occupants were killed." And so the brother said, "Well, what about the chimpanzee?" And sheriff said, "Well, we don't know anything about chimpanzees." The brother said, "Yes, the chimpanzee was just like a member of the family, and go back on the scene and see if you can find the chimpanzee, because if you can find the chimpanzee, he would tell you what happened." And sure enough, the sheriff went back, and here was this chimpanzee in the tree. And he said, "You have to use sign language, and if you use sign language, you can communicate with the chimpanzee." So the sheriff said, "Well, what happened?" And chimpanzee said, sheriff said, "Well, what was the father doing?" And the chimpanzee said, "Oh, he was drinking." So what was the mother doing? "She was sleeping." He said, "So what about the children? What were they doing?" "They were fighting." Sheriff said, "Well, what were you doing?" Remember as you journey that you are in the driver's seat. Do not permit anyone to be in your driver's seat, because you'll end up going somewhere that more than likely that you don't want to go, kill everybody in the car, and live to tell the story. So remember, as you record, you're in the driver's seat. That's very important. You can learn valuable lessons in terms of how to maintain an external from other people. But basically, you're the driver. You decide on the rules. The major rule is to write. And how often you do it, I suggest that you do it frequently, on a regular basis. There will be periods that you will have lapses, and you forgive yourself about that. But sometimes you don't even have to write. Sometimes you can just draw pictures. And my niece, who was 7 years old at the time, was browsing through my journal, and she said, "Uncle Tyrone, you don't have any pictures in your journal." I said, "What do you mean?" And she showed me her journal. And she had all sorts of pictures and all sorts of colors in her journal. So you see my J car? I'm not an artist. But immediately as I see this entry, I see the J car, and I know what it means. And once I review the journal, I find myself really looking at the colors and the pictures more than I do the written portions of it, if you follow what I'm saying. And if I draw a pretty good picture, I'll know immediately what I was recording. For example, just before coming here, and we were at Mount Crete, another retreat center, which is sponsored by the Presbyterian Church. Again, you may not see it, but I can see it. I was sitting in a brook and looking at rock formation and water falling down through the rock, across the rocks and trees here. Mm-hmm. And it was just a wonderful experience, an exercise in which I have people to go down and literally sit in the brook. This is where I normally sort of do these sort of things, not in the classroom form, but to go to the brook. And I have always found the brook to speak to us in very sacred ways. And I recall one experience where I was instructing people what we're going to do, and this lawyer type said, "We're going to do what? We're going to go sit and play in the brook?" "I'm not going to do that." I said, "Fine, you don't have to do that." And we went down to the brook, and I had to make him get out. He did not want to get out. And one of the things we said is that if you sit and you quiet yourself and you center yourself, the brook will speak to you. Now, the message is always unique. It will speak to you. And this guy, he had a lot of things to get out of his system before the brook could speak, and he stayed in the water longer than the rest of us. And we gathered at the side of the brook, and he had to confess. He said, you know, that brook did talk to me. He said, I'm amazed. He said, I was sitting there, and I found myself, without realizing, building a dam. And he said, suddenly it came to me, the brook said to me, you can't control me, no more than you can control your children or the people who work for you. He said, that was what I was supposed to hear. We have to listen for the sacred, and we'll discover that all of God's creation is trying to tell us something, trying to reveal something to us. But it's so wonderful, it's very important for us to record that. Because at the time you say, oh, I'll always remember this, but you'll be surprised what you forget. It's important to maintain a record, and a visual record, a written record, and the entry I have here at the brook, rocks and running water, one stays put while the other runs free. May I be blessed to know when to run free like the water and when to stay put. Like a rock. Well, that's what the brook told me that time. One of the times I sat at the brook. And there was another entry here I wrote about the brook, which I'll find, but in essence, it said to me, as I was trying to find a place along the brook, it said, don't worry about a particular place, just find your place, and it'll come, and there will always be a message for you as you sit in the brook. So the basic rule is to journal, to write it down. There'll be wonderful experiences that you'll be tempted to say, well, this is so powerful, it's not necessary to record. But I really encourage you to record. So let's talk about, we talked about the journal part. The basic rule is to write, and you're in the driver's seat. You can read others in terms of what they have experienced in terms of their maintaining a journal. But basically you decide whether you'll write lamentations or affirmations. But what I have found is I go back and review my journals, and I maintain a journal since 1979, that as a rule is this is where I got the J-car from, that a lot of times I write down confessions. Many times I write down affirmations, and then I record wonderful times of play or recreation. And I was encouraged to maintain a journal by the late mystic theologian Howard Thurman, and he advised me to walk in the light which falls on your path. And we all have a path, and the light falls on all our path, and it's important to do that. I had a very profound, what I would call ESP experience, my first entry. And unfortunately, I was not as organized in maintaining a journal. I just wrote it down on a piece of paper, and I lost that piece of paper. But the point is, if I did not write it down, in my rational state, I would have said, this is not real, this is not true, that I did not really have this special ESP experience. This was something that I imagined. But when you write something down, you can't deny it. Now, the C part is dealing with, what's the C?
Confession.
Mm-hmm. Now, in worship, you as Lutherans, we as Presbyterians and other mainline denominations, we have a part of the worship service where we confess our sins. And it's a in the order of worship, or collect, as we call it, and we all read it together, and we say, now we have confessed our sin. And then the pastor, the priest will say, you are pardoned. Well, let me tell you something. For every general confession that you make, you will receive a general blessing from God. You will receive a general healing from God. But for every specific confession you make, you will receive a specific blessing from God. You will receive specific healing. Now think about that. I learned that through the 12-step program of AA. You have to be specific in your confessions. Otherwise, you really can't be healed. And you can't, and that is a prerequisite before the affirmation. Because as long as we have the garbage in our lives there is no room to receive the blessings or the affirmations. A limited room. You follow what I'm saying. And we all have stuff. We have garbage to deal with. Painful stuff from the past. Current stuff. Stuff that we're trying to figure out, now what do we do with this? That's why don't try to make sense of it, just write it down. The pain, the suffering, the whatever it is. I'm glad I had that garble routine last week because it to help me to understand this metaphor a little better. The garble thing, you have to figure out the sorting, rearranging stuff, and what's going to go where, and it's not simple enough to just do plastics, but there are certain categories of plastics. And see, when you journal, you're writing down everything, then you can go back through and you can classify, if you follow what I'm saying. And isn't it wonderful? I didn't know what compost was until I got here. That's the garbage. And see, in all your garbage that you put down in here, all the stuff that's painful and hurting, what you do is you turn it into compost, which gives what? New life. That's the stuff they put out here on the grass that helps new life to develop. God doesn't waste anything. There's no such thing as waste. And we got to use all the stuff, even the painful, ugly stuff, to find out what God is saying to us. And we always ask those why questions. Why is this happening to me? Well, we may not figure it out at the time, but you write it down. Howard Thurman was asked by a person who was living with cancer, and eventually she was dying with this cancer. She wanted some spiritual guidance in terms of with her own pain and suffering. She just had a very, very difficult time with it. And Howard Thurman recommended a book that was long out of print by the name of a woman, Jean Steiger, Leaves from a Secret Journal. Are you familiar with that, any of you? If you can find it around, it's been reprinted to, I think, back in 1965 or something like that. But anyway, it was a woman who it was not identified in her journal, but she had some type of incurable disease that she was living with. And she made all types of wonderful spiritual discoveries as a result of that pain. This is the irony of a journal. It is a very private place. And it's very instructive for you personally, but it's also instructive for others. Now, when she made those entries, she just made them for herself. She was in her J car. I mean, she was doing it for herself, and she's long since been gone. And like the Psalms which we read is so instructive for so many others. Now, I'm not suggesting that you write your journal with the idea in mind that 10 years from now or 100 years from now, thousands will benefit from your journal entries. That should not be your motivation for maintaining a journal. But people will benefit from it. I was told of an old miner who lived here in Holden, not too far from here, Stuart Gordon, who lived up in the mountains here and maintained the journal. And some women that were working with him after he was up in age took his journals and wrote it in a book form. Reading here, I don't have the name of the book, but it's the story of, I think, Stuart Gordon. And many people just benefit from reading that person's journal. I don't anticipate thousands reading my journal at some point, but I think at some point in time, perhaps my grandchildren will pick up Granddad's journal, or maybe even my children. And when they're trying to figure out some stuff, as they're going along in their J-car, they'll figure out some shortcuts by reading my journal, if you follow what I'm saying. So even though your journal is an intensely very private place, it can benefit thousands or even millions. So I don't, I tell people, family members, don't read other people's journals, because you read it at your own risk. I don't go try to hide my journal. I just leave it out. I said, but if you read it, you read it at your own risk. Because this is a place that I have permission, because this is my J-car, mm-hmm. to write in the journal what I want, about dreams or whatever, or about what happened at dinner or our argument or whatever, or my feelings about that. And if you read it, you're taking a little risk messing with somebody's journal. So I really encourage people not to look at other people's journal unless you know the risk that you're engaging in. So you have permission to record what you have in there, but we're focusing now on the confession. We said that confessions need to be specific. Well, the confessions you make should be your confessions. Don't go around confessing other people's sins. Now, that's easy to do. And very tempting. Every once in a while, I say, Lord, what am I? I'm confessing other people's sins here. Now, I know that's against the rule. I'm not supposed to confess my wife's sins, or my daughter's sins, or my son's, or anybody else's sin. I'm supposed to confess my sins. You see. And that's important to remember, that you confess your sins. But there, you know, you may get some powerful insights as you look at your entries in terms of your confessing other people's sins. But if nothing else, it tells you that you're avoiding your own stuff. And that's a very important important thing in terms of maintaining a journal. There's a lot of, you know, we talked about garbage and we deal with all our confessions. As you sort through the garbage in your journal, you'll decide which is your garbage and which is not your garbage. Some of us who are codependent types, like myself, I have a tendency to want to mess with other people's garbage. And I don't have enough time to deal with my own. So when I find other people's garbage, I just push it aside. I don't have to fix that one. In fact, I don't have any control or any power over that stuff. Because it's not mine. But this is my garbage. And let me sort through this and learn from this pain and the suffering, etc. So the confession should be specific, and it should be yours. Okay? Affirmations. Again, before the confession is a prerequisite before the affirmations. Because if you don't do that, it's what I call, if you still got your garbage not sorted, if it's still there, you'll have what I call spiritual constipation. So you can't enjoy a wonderful good meal if you're constipated. Excuse my metaphor, but I think you understand what I'm talking about. You got to deal with the clutter first. Process it in a very healthy and constructive sort of way. And you start, the affirmation really starts with yourself. It's amazing how we are, we don't affirm ourselves. You start by affirming and said, yes, I'm a wonderful creation by created by God. I had an experience when I was when I lived 9 winters in Minnesota, in St. Paul, that I had to get away from all the cult clutter around me. So I was invited to stay in a parishioner's cabin up in northern Wisconsin. And I went there, which was pretty wilderness type. It was another farmhouse, maybe 4 or 5 miles away. And got away from all the clutter, all the noise, the kids fighting, all the dysfunctional stuff in my life and in the church, and etc. And had a chance to really center myself and pay attention to stuff that I normally would not pay attention to. And in that evening, after walking through the woods, I really started examining a snowflake. And I had heard about how beautiful snowflakes are and how unique they are. I never paid any attention until that time. And they are something. I mean, every snowflake is different. It's just amazing to me. And you have to take the time to do that. But not only are they different, they're all beautiful. Every one. There's no such thing as an ugly snowflake. That doesn't even exist. All of them are beautiful. And then as I was doing that, it came to me that I was a snowflake. Beautiful and unique. And then I lifted my head up and I looked out into a cornfield, and I saw billions upon billions upon billions of snowflakes piled upon one another. All unique, all beautiful, and together they made a beautiful landscape of God's blessing as we share our lives together. And so at that point, I sort of felt maybe something like Jesus after he was baptized. When Jesus heard a voice from heaven say, "This is my beloved child in whom I am well pleased." Isn't it wonderful when you can be affirmed by God and God will call you by your name? And we've all had, I think, those types of experiences. Well, you write those things down. Write them down. Whenever you know or you feel God is affirming you in some way, reminding you that you are unique, reminding you that you are beautiful, write it down, because you'll so quickly forget it. And there will come a time when your well is low, when you'll need to go back to refer to your journal to remind yourself of that particular affirmation. If someone comes along and and say to you, I just like the way you dress. I mean, you dress in a very colorful way, and I just sense a special joy and special vibration whenever I am in your presence. Don't say, oh, shucks. Say thank you. Mm-hmm. Praise God for it and go back and write it in your journal. My last session, at the end of the session, a guy came up to me and said, Tyrone, I like you, and gave me a great big hug. Mm-hmm. I said, thank you for that affirmation. I'm going to write it in my journal. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't write it in my journal, but I do record things like that. Whenever you're affirmed by your spouse or your children, that's so important to record. Because we live in an intensely negative society. If you don't believe it, go read the newspapers over there or look at television. Or think about your conversation around the dinner table as you go back and be with your family in your place and compare the negative comments with the positive. And some say they record as many as 15 negative comments to every positive. That is something. Now you think about it. Pay attention to your conversation and determine whether they're positive or negative. Sit up straight. Wipe your mouth off. Eat all your vegetables. And think about your conversation with your spouse and what type of. Now, we know the positive things are there, but we don't bother to say them. But those are important to say. I give my wife flowers. I don't wait for a special day. I give her flowers. She can expect flowers at least once a month. Give flowers to the living. And when I have young adult children, and the kids can be so sophomoric, you know. And, Dad, wait, you know, you know, man. I said, I want my flowers now. And they know what I mean when I say that. Because the story is told about a funeral, and they had all types of flowers there. It just, oh, wonderful, beautiful flowers. And this one guy walked in, brought a bowl of soup. And somebody said, fool, why are you bringing a bowl of soup to a funeral service? He said, well, this guy here can use those flowers just as much as he can use this bowl of soup. So give me my bowl of soup and flowers now. And we have to be intentional about that. We give those affirmations. Affirm your children. Especially when they grow up and go away, write letters of affirmation to your loved ones, particularly the children. I wrote an affirmation to my daughter, Michelle. The letter was just some things that I'm one of her critics, and that's one of the things that you have to be as a parent. Sometimes you don't always like doing that. You want to help your children to make good decisions. I don't try to make decisions for them, but you want to assist them in terms of trying to make good decisions. And so I sometimes can be overzealous in my concern. And that's why it's important for me to be intentional about the affirmations to some percentage. And I wrote her this letter of affirmation. She said she picked up her lashes. Oh, God, this is a letter from Dad. I just know what this thing's about. She knew that it was a check in there, so she had to open it up. But it was the other part that she was really scared about. And she opened up that letter. and she started reading it. And I just said all the things that I had said to her many times, but this time I wrote it down. And so it was not new information, it was just reaffirmations. And reaffirmations are important. And she just broke down crying. In fact, she lost the check because she was so preoccupied with the letter of affirmation. And fortunately, she had a friend who found the check and returned it to her. But she was passing this letter all through the dorm. Look, I'm my dad. Here he is crying, my dad. Whenever I start a new journal book, I like to start with some form of affirmation because I know there's going to be a lot of other stuff in here, the garbage stuff. And last year I asked Michelle to write an entry for me, and this time I asked Gordon. And so my first page I have here, this is from my son Gordon, 22 years old. Dear old dad, a man whom I truly admire, respect, and consider a very close friend. I wish you all the best this year, and may all your dreams come true. Love, Gordon. Now, see, when I get upset with Gordon, and I need to be reminded, I just turn to this, you know, that sort of put things back into perspective thing. My daughter Michelle, who attempted to write an affirmation last year, I mean, it was one of those affirmations that had a conjunction with it, so. But, however, and if it has a but or a however, it kills the affirmation. No, it's not an affirmation. You cannot have a conjunction with an affirmation. And she had an affirmation with a conjunction last year. So she said, Dad, what are you going to write in your journal? You can look at it here. Oh, so she just wrote down there very simply, I love you, Daddy, Michelle. And that's an affirmation, and sometimes it just has to be just that simple. So affirmations are very, very important. I'm going to stop here because we, you know, as I say, you never finish, and I'm going to pick up some more on this whenever I'm scared to do it. I guess it's tomorrow. Today is Tuesday. I'll do a couple tomorrow to allow you some an opportunity, the last 12 minutes we have together, to share your experiences with journals, to raise any questions that you may have or any clarity. I just want you to remember the J card, mm-hmm. that you're in the driver's seat, and the J is for
journal.
And the C is for
affirmations.
And the A?
Affirmations.
And we'll talk about recreation another time, okay? All right, let's get into some questions or comments or et cetera, please. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering how you deal with, I've only really kept the journal once, and that was when we were traveling for a year, and so I did it because I wanted to and I had the time and I wasn't distracted. But I can remember so clearly not feeling like I was being totally honest in that journal because I didn't want to write down when I was angry. Mm-hmm. And I was living in a real close quarters with my family, my husband and son. And I kept, you know, somewhere in the back of my mind was that somebody else is going to read this sometime. And so I wasn't letting them really know the whole truth of our experience because living in that close confinement, which I don't deal well with anyway, you know, I can remember being angry a lot, being frustrated, wanting to scream, you know. And I never expressed this in a journal. And I'm just wondering how you deal with being totally honest in that, knowing that, I mean, if you think of people in the future reading that, do you not worry about what, I guess it's like worrying about what someone's going to think of you, which is really unfortunate. But anyway, I'm throwing that out and asking you how that's a problem for you.
It's always a problem when you're being honest. And the first place is honesty with self. Because we're not honest with ourselves, much less with other people. I had a couple of dreams last night that I'm sort of still debating whether I'm going to record them. Because I'm afraid that someone else may pick it up, even though that's a risky business to do, and read it and take it out of context. But if I'm going to be completely about it, honest about it, sometimes I'm hiding from what the information that's trying, that nature or God or whatever is trying to share with me, I don't want to deal with it myself. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. I was going to try to find 139 again, Psalms. God knows me completely. What I'll say before I say it knows my mind. I think it's important to be as brave with yourself as you can. And if you're not comfortable with complete honesty with yourself, I think it's important to deal with your comfort level. But remember this hypothesis. As specific as you can be in your confessions, the more specific will be your blessing, your healing. And so I always try to balance it off with that. Please, someone had a question. Right. Yes.
I did. It's true sometimes when I was journaling that honesty with myself, it was scary to me. And it was much easier to just kind of live on the surface rather than to always be dealing with all those churning emotions or thoughts or problems that I didn't always want to deal with, but I kind of push it aside. But I can see where at other times, if I just write it down, then I can leave it lay and kind of rest with that too. So it's a safety valve in some ways, and in other ways it kind of makes me face things.
Sometimes we figure that we have to fix it right then, and that's why I say you don't worry about all that, just write it. It'll come maybe a month later or sometimes years later. I go back and record journals and I say, whoa! You'll see a pattern there, and I say, I wish I had more information here that I was not brave enough to share. It'll give me clarity. So as best you can, be as honest with. Don't worry about other people. You figure on this basis, God knows it all anyway. And that's the ultimate judgment. But be honest with yourself as best, as much as you can handle.
Well, I think one of the things, in relating kind of back to you, I've been journaling the last while, but I'm sporadic about it, and I do tend to write down things that I really do not want my family to see at this point in time. I have adolescents, and sometimes I'm writing a lot of angry stuff. Mm-hmm. Part of what frightens me is that it becomes then a very concrete exploration, perhaps, of, you know, it's there, it's down on this piece of paper, and I can't avoid it anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's still kind of rattling around back up in here, then I can still avoid that, but when it's down there on paper, sometimes I'm afraid if I write it down, then it's just that much more real. And if I write about the things that I'm frightened about, that, yike, maybe those things will, just maybe writing them down will make that happen. And so I kind of censor some of that stuff. I mean, it becomes a very concrete thing that we have there that you can't kind of get away from.
Well, you see, the 12-step program of AA, Al-Anon, there are a number of 12 steps. They insist that you write it down for that very reason. And I think that's correct. Because, you know, our minds play all types of funny games with us. I mean, we don't rely upon oral tradition or the memory sort of thing. We conveniently forget stuff. You know how your children are sometimes. And they, I don't remember that.
I didn't do that.
And I discovered that with our family meetings that we had to take minutes. We can't rely upon the memory sometimes. Did we decide? Yes, well, you know we decided that. So, sometimes for that, that's another example why we should record, even for ourselves. Others, please.
I would think where I'm concerned that if in the back of my mind, I've got to think about, well, somebody else is going to pick this up and read it someday, that would limit what I was going to put down. But if I just say, this is my book, this is me, and I'm writing it for me, and I'm going to be long gone before anybody else gets their hands on this to read it. If I'm lucky enough, I'll burn it up first. But if not, I'm going to be long gone, and I'm not going to be concerned at that time about what's in that book anymore. And maybe there will be some helpful things in that book for those who read it.
I'm sure there will be. Someone shared this experience with me. This person was living and died with cancer, and before he passed, he wrote out a confession that he shared with his wife. And they, for the most part, they had a pretty good 40 or 50 years together. And then this, he passed, and she picked up this envelope and read where he shared where he had an affair with this woman for 20, 25 years. Mm-hmm. Now, the way I see that, I don't think that was very fair. Mm-hmm. He didn't really come clean with that. And I felt that was an irresponsible way. Mm-hmm. Your journal is for you to help you to grow spiritually, mm-hmm. but you don't want to cause undue pain and suffering for other people for the garbage that you created. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if it's you're being honest with yourself, and if he wrote about his own pain about that and was in his journal for that reason, then perhaps that was appropriate. Mm-hmm. But I think that's why I tell people that this is my journal, and if you read it, you read it to your own risk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe another way to approach it is to journal in addition with your prayer life. I mean, I think the first thing we need to do is bring these confessions to the Lord, and even talk with Him about affirmations, mm-hmm. and, you know, in our prayer life, remind ourselves that we're special creations to Him. And when we do that, it's like the brook, I think we hear His voice answering us. And sometimes that answers all those things. And then journalize, you know, the answers to those prayers also. So it's a...
The other side of that, I would say, is that if people pick up your journals, and if you're intentional about affirmations, mm-hmm. they'll see some affirmations about themselves in your journal. And won't that be a big surprise? Mm-hmm. And I think if people are mature enough, they can... That's why it's important to have maybe some distance, even for yourself, when you review your journal. Because sometimes we're just too close to really see it. Mm-hmm. And it's important to have a little time and space before we pick it up. And I think it's true for those. This is why I say, in a sort of guarded sort of way, it's for you, but it's also for everyone. Mm-hmm. Because, and I would like for my people I care for to benefit from my journey. Mm-hmm. And that includes my garbage, which, you know, I don't like it, but they're going to have garbage too. And my children ask me all the time, well, Dad, how do you deal with this? Mm-hmm. And I am vulnerable with my children. I tell them specific experiences. When my son started dating, and I told her experience, even when he was younger, so he wasn't surprised when he got older. And I said, he said, Dad, what do you think? And I said, well, remember the Pat T story? Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, Dad, that same thing. I said, right. Mm-hmm. Well, I lived through that, and I told him very specifically an experience that I had in dating. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't try to be perfect with my children. Because I'm not perfect. And I think it's through our brokenness that we become most human. And I don't want anybody to ever think that I'm a perfect person, because I'm not. And I think that's the biggest lie we live in the church. Mm-hmm. We pretend we're perfect people. And it's only through our brokenness and our sharing our brokenness that we can become healthy people, and and our brokenness can be instructive for others. But it's hard, and it's very risky to share our brokenness. Very, very risky. But there's so much growth that comes as a result of that. Another comment? We can take another comment before we close. Please, I want to get yours too.
I've tried several times to keep a journal, of my personal life and my personal thoughts, and never really stuck with it over any significant period of time. And yet, at work, if you ask me what I was doing 20 years ago today, I probably have notes that tell you exactly what I was doing and what I was thinking. Essentially, I have a journal of my work, of my trade, of my growth, and of the various ideas I've had and tried out and so on. And I don't understand why I can be so faithful to doing it on one part of my life and have so much difficulty dealing, trying to do essentially the same thing in the other half of my life.
That's not really surprising or unique. I think, again, it's always a challenge to deal with certain areas of our life, in our total honesty. But we begin, and we start off taking small steps, and then we discover in time we're running with it. Last comment.
Oh, I was just going to mention about the anger that I find it sometimes helpful to write it down, because then you can sort of let it go when, you know, I don't want to forget why I'm angry at you, you know, so I hold on to it and I think about it all the time. But if I can write it down, then I can forget it, because I can go back and look at it and go, oh, it says right here, you did this. And then I find it's not so bad after, maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought originally, or I had a new perspective.
Put it in perspective.
But I don't have to
hold on to it.
Yeah.
Because you get angry for so long and then you forget, man, what am I mad about? Thank you. It's so nice we had this time together.